Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This episode, we have my friend Paul Fanner. Don't know if you know Paul. If you happen to subscribe to Racer Magazine, you probably do, because it's his name on top. Paul's a person who founded Racer Magazine, Racer.com. He's a person who puts me and Robin Miller, Mark Lynn Denning, Lawrence Foster, so many others, puts us to work, gives us a platform to be who we are, tell our stories, gives us almost complete free reign. And what we found from the moment I got to know Paul, from the moment that we started working together, is he's one of us, a lifer, like myself, like Robin, like some of the other folks that I mentioned, the George Tamayo's, Richard James, Bill Sparks, and so on. All the folks at Racer Magazine that make it happen, both, on the front lines and behind the scenes. That's Paul. So here we are at Racer's 25th anniversary. I probably mentioned this before at some point in time on a podcast, but I remember exactly where I was, exactly when I bought my first issue, the debut issue of Racer Magazine in 1992. Fell in love with it. Always wanted to be a part of it, even back then when I was a young and bad mechanic and engineer and whatnot. Knew at some point in time in my career I wanted to be a part of the Racer family, and here I am. Actually came on board around the 20th anniversary, but when Speed went away, Robin and I came in full-time, essentially in 2013, and this is what we wake up and do. When we get on planes, we travel here throughout the country, throughout the world to report, tell stories, give analysis, do some funny stuff, do videos, whatever. So here at 25 years, just wanted to sit down with Paul, talk about it, where the magazine, where the property is at, where it's going, got into his background, and some really cool stories about him coming into the sport, how he kind of snuck his way into motor racing. And if you've listened to my podcast, I love getting behind the scenes. I love going behind the curtains. And some of the stuff we talk about is a little bit of inside baseball, but we're on the media side, and this is someone who's created a magazine that's 25 years old. And if you head to the newsstands, you head to Barnes & Noble, and try and find racing magazines, Racer is just about the only one left, at least that's produced in North America, that is a monthly, as I refer to in the podcast, it's kind of our National Geographic that spans everything from drag racing to Formula One to NASCAR. And so, went under the hood, talked about those 25 years, some of the pivotal points. Paul's imprint, really the person who drives what we do and shapes the approach that we have. He spoke about a lot of the key players who helped get him and get Racer to where it is. So a little bit of a walk through who he is and what he's created. Tell me about what this year represents, getting to 25 years. There aren't many in our industry on the media side that can say that they've hit that milestone and they're still running.
Well, Marshall, first off, it's an amazing moment to realize that we've made it at one level. The goal was always to make this an enduring part of the racing landscape, and our mission has always been to tell the stories of racers everywhere, and we do what we do for the audience. We work for them. We're not ever confused about it.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're still here is a result of earning their trust and respect and continued support, and also the commercial partners and the sanctioning bodies, they validate us, they want us to be here, and we're truly accepted. And that's been gratifying to all of us who work so hard to create this magazine.
So with this magazine, with its digital extension, with the design extension, with Racer's creative force and folks behind it as well, gone from having what was a really cool, awesome magazine pre-internet days. That's also a fun thing, which makes me feel old.
Yes.
I think the first time I got online barely was around 91-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with the help of a friend, because I wasn't that intelligent to figure it out myself. I had to ask him what Windows was, and he explained it, and I didn't understand it at all. But it's pretty cool to think that Racer Magazine's debut in 92 was not just pre-internet in terms of folks having it, grasping it, but I think a lot of what people get today from Racer, the Racer style, the Racer voice, is from Racer.com.
Yes, yes.
Which just wasn't even a thing to think about when the magazine came to life. Tell me a little bit about that, because we have this beautiful print thing that we all take so much pride in, but then we also have this daily thing where we get to feed folks, you know, the news, the insight, the analysis, photos, videos. It's a lot to manage, brother, and I don't manage it, so I don't envy you.
Well, the nice thing is that they keep me in my office and out of their hair, so a lot of it gets done without me. But Racer.com was something we began to think about in 1995.
Really?
We produced a daily news, fax newsletter called Race Week, and Gordon Kirby edited it with the help of Bill King. And we were aware of the internet and its potential, and it was just, how do we get there? How do we do it? We were excited by it because we'd originally looked at Racer being a magazine called Race Week in the style of Autosport, and abandoned it because we came to the realization that the market needed something like Racer, which is a high quality, almost collateral piece for motorsport. But we thought, you know, technology's marching a certain direction. We'll hop on that when it comes along. So it took until 1997 to launch the Racer.com. It was May of 1997. So we are also celebrating the 20th anniversary of Racer.com. And we embraced it. Bill King drove a lot of that originally. We had a great group of people who extended their contributions to Racer into the early website. And we loved the idea of it, and to me, it made the brand complete. We had a 24/7, 365 presence for the narrative of what was happening, and the magazine was always there to give perspective on why something happened, or why it might happen, or what the backstory or history of the sport was. And we had this living thing in the website that just kept people up to date, and it took off pretty quickly. To the point where it got the notice of Roger Werner, who had founded the Speed Vision Network. Yeah. And we'd known Roger was a friend, and he came to us at the end of 1999 and said, let's put our businesses together. And we then assumed running speedvision.com. We just rolled our content provision into that, and had racer.com become only a news, basically a subscription site, and that went on for some time.
Wow. So in and around Long Beach, we had the Racer party that's become an annual tradition, but had the 25th anniversary celebration as well. And as someone who, you know, has, I believe I own almost every issue and have been fortunate to contribute to a number of them over the last 5 years or so, I was a bit taken aback by some of the numbers when you started going through and seeing that Team Penske has been on the cover X amount of time. Yeah. The Andretti family, you know, between Marco, Michael, and Mario have been on X number of times over this span of years. All of the National Geographic style documentation of our sport in North America, and obviously we also cover internationally, but that is what really struck me, and I'm not saying this or blowing smoke. As an avid collector of magazines, and someone who routinely goes to them to when I'm writing something, because a lot of what Racer covered, again, was this pre-internet era, or has never made it to the web since then. Start to look back at these numbers, who has been covered, how many times, the different areas. And that's where I had a whole new appreciation for what you and the team created and have kept going and took back.
Yes.
Took the company back. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But looking at this 25th anniversary celebration, Scott Atherton, IMSA president, sharing his thoughts and appreciation for the magazine, the Andretti family doing the same, Chip Ganassi and Mike Hull, so many folks wanting to at least check in and say, hey, Paul and team, thanks for what you've done. Thanks for still being here. I have to imagine there was a sense of appreciation for that, or are you the type of guy to say, thanks, great, but we're not hitting the pause button here. We're still flat in sixth.
Well, it's been great. I've looked forward to it, yet it's like my friend Brian Herta said on the 3 hours after Alexander Rossi won the Indy 500, he said, this is really great. He's drained, and he said, I've got a race to go run next weekend, and that's what I'm thinking about now. And you can't dwell too long. Oh, this is important to communicate. what we stand for as a brand and a team. I think it's a good opportunity to do it. But we're already almost finished with the next issue and planning the issue beyond that, and working on a broad distribution deal for our content from Racer.com with a major media company. We have all these other things we're doing. So, it's Long Beach and the Racer Party seems like an eternity ago, and working on this issue seems like 1,000 years ago. So, it's just what I love about racing, you're always living on the edge of what comes next. It's all about that. And that's what I love about this magazine and the website. Every day is something new and exciting, and we're here to tell that story.
So I don't know how to ask this without it sounding like an infomercial, but the name of the magazine, the name of the website, the name of everything is Racer. Mm-hmm. Could be called many other things, but that name, as I have seen and as I have felt, it really does define what we do. We are racers.
Right.
We are not venture capitalists looking at something that could make us a few dollars if we dip into this market. We're not looking to streamline with whomever we can get that can do a passable job.
Right.
Probably a few too many of us with a little salt in our beard, a little older, but with that, hopefully there's some experience. Describe the racer mentality, the racer culture, the racer vibe, because it does, in my opinion, separate us and this property from so many others. Not that there aren't other people out there in our industry that are, there are other racers too, but this seems to be a very tight collective of like-minded people. What's different about it?
Well, first off, many of us have actually worked in racing beyond being involved as media people. We've been parts of teams. We've worked on the marketing of the sport. We've worked, some of us have driven. And there are those of us who've driven unspectacularly as well. The thing is we kind of come to it with a racer's mindset, which is one of constant improvement, self-critical, always looking at, how could this be better? How could that session be better? How can that issue be better? How can that day be better? How can that race be better that we covered? How can we make this feature or this video better? We're always looking at that, and we're also always aware that racing is nothing more than processing change faster and better than your competitors. And sometimes that involves not going down a rabbit hole of something that doesn't make sense just because it looks like change. It's this great racer's mindset with a balance between too much aggression and just enough aggression and being open to new ideas and new ways of doing things. And our editor-in-chief, Lawrence Foster, is an amazing person. He transformed our company the day he walked in the door in 2004. He's a trained aerodynamicist who turned down a position at Williams to continue in a journalist path at Autosport. And his understanding of the engineering and dynamics behind racing car are phenomenal, as are your experiences.
Oh, stop that.
But seriously, when we're talking about these things, we have people who actually have been involved with them. They've stood in a pit lane, or they've been in a wind tunnel. They know what they're talking about. And many of the people who write things that's great about Racer, is a lot of the voices are racers. We don't just put it through the filter of a journalist. Racers have stories to tell, and maybe they're better at doing that than we are.
So Mr. Foster, I hadn't known him beforehand.
Yep.
I had obviously seen his name at the top of the masthead, but soon came to learn that we have a shared passion for Cosworth DFVs. We have a...
Who doesn't?
Well, but that's one of those things where you go, if you don't, you suck. I don't like you. You're not my friend. You have some serious flaws in your personality.
I need one as my ringtone.
We have a shared passion for 1995 and 1996 DTM cars. Not 97, not 94. You look at Robin Miller, who has been a great friend for many years, and Robin has... Robin grew up, was a kid on pit lane, working for IndyCar teams in his 20s, which happened to be during the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
sitting, just a silly little anecdote, but we were at Phoenix for the IndyCar race last weekend, and we got news that Joe Leonard died.
Right.
Robin and I are sitting next to one another. This is, you know, early in the day, long before any on-track activity was taking place. Robin needed to put together an obituary for Joe Leonard, who he knew and knew well. Mm-hmm. So as I'm sitting next to Robin, he calls Mario Andretti, AJ Foyt, Dan Gurney, Parnelli Jones in a span of about 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, those are all folks that many of us know, can call, we speak with on occasion. But what was fun was seeing some of the other reporters and journalists that were sitting around us, watching Robin grab his phone and talk to four-time Indy 500 winner.
Yes.
Legend here, the big eagle, and seeing folks realize that, holy crap, I would dream of having a two-minute conversation with this legend, that legend, and it's Robin picking up the phone, and these folks not only answering, but what the hell are you doing, Miller? Oh, you son of a bitch, that story you wrote. It, phenomenal.
One of them's actually punched him once, too.
Very true. I mean, we've all wanted to, but so it, just a roundabout way of saying, you look at someone like Lawrence with his deep, deep yes. knowledge.
And connections as well. It's impressive.
You look at Robin, who has incredible ties to the golden era of open wheel racing in North America and is as current as can be, talking and interviewing young Colton Herta and knowing, you know, being plugged into his career trajectory as well. You look at Mark Lendenning, who is our editor at racer.com, someone who has been on the Formula One trail at every round, covering it live and in person, and been at Le Mans, covered Le Mans. You look at so many of the other pieces and assets that we have, and all right, this is a little vainglorious here, but I've spent most of my life working on teams.
Mm-hmm.
My wife realized immediately why I wanted to work with you and the team at Racer, because it was a team mm-hmm. structure.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, of all the things I've seen you do, is facilitate, essentially, Paul's racing team. It's not a Formula Ford. Mm-hmm. I know you wish we were all running a Formula Ford for you and for me as well, but tell me about that team dynamic, because there are a lot of other media organizations where they have great people and assets, but they're in far remote places and are essentially lone wolves. You created a collective of people who I'd say fairly high caliber.
Well, they're all very high caliber. We have no slackers in our team, and I think it's important to point out that 12 years ago there were 35 people sitting in that building doing the job that 13 people and six freelancer or contracted contributors do now. So that takes a team to be able to do effectively the same volume of work, in some cases much more work than was being done before. And there's a level of competency and trust in each other where you're not having to second guess everybody all the time. You don't have to tell anybody what to do. They know what to do. And it's just a great environment. Can it be better? Sure, we're always thinking of ways for it to be better. What we need, who we need.
That's what the comment sections are for.
Yeah, that's right. The guidance we gain.
Don't read the comments, please.
Hey, the comment sections, I look forward to it. It reminds me we do what we do for the readers. And I'm glad they enjoy it so much to comment on it positively or negatively. It means that, you know, that's one thing people often mention is that we know they're reading your stuff by the volume of comment.
The number of times you've been told to go kill yourself.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot. But the point is somebody actually cares about what everybody does.
Yeah, fair
point. Which, you know, if you're a team, means something. It motivates you. And we're motivated to do the best job we can for those readers.
So let me weave through a little bit of time in history for folks. And I don't know. The media, it's funny, the media has become an actual term these days in most of our lives. I think the media does not always receive a very positive impression from some folks that refer to it. But if I look at what has been created within your world, starting with the creation of Racer in 92, Racer.com, 5 years after that, there are some pretty cool anniversaries, if you want to call it as well, from a staffing standpoint. So yeah, Robin Miller's byline is on a lot of stories, or mine, Kelly Crandall, Chris Medland, you name it. There are a lot of people whose names are seen up front and in print. And then you also realize that behind the scenes, but essentially the bedrock of what we do in the digital world, for example, is Andrew Krask, who's been a part of Racer forever. Bill Sparks, Richard S. James, George Tamayo. And again, I realize these aren't folks that most readers should see as much as we would love for them to, but these are folks that are taking care of other digital properties. These are folks that are Philip Royal. I mean, I go on and on. The folks who are making Sports Car Magazine happen. The fact that you have a Penske-like armada as well of folks where you go, there's Myron. Myron's been with Penske for 30-plus years, and Chuck and Fred, and you realize, okay, if someone is staying around for 20 years, 25 years, with the level of expectations that you set, Lawrence sets, Mark sets, folks would not survive if they didn't bring something really unique to the table. So maybe just tell me a little bit about how some of these long-term folks have been a part of your world and continue to drive what we do.
Well, I think that the best starting point of all is Racer's founding publisher, Bill Sparks. Racer would not exist without him, and we'd worked together when Bill was a photographer and a writer, and he started with our very first publication, which was Finish Line for the Sports Car Club of America.
That's awesome.
Which we won the contract to publish that in 1980. It was
I was 10.
Yes. I was 11. We wanted to demonstrate to the world that we could win the contract to publish Sports Car for the SCCA, which is their national magazine, and it took us 4 years to begin that. We won the contract in May 1983, and Bill served as a managing editor. Over time, I realized he just had a lot of skills. He came from a finance background. He really understood circulation and understood the business side better than I did. And he began working on a plan in the late 1980s, which was our Project X plan to launch our own magazine once we'd stabilized Sports Car. We got a contract to publish a magazine for Goodyear on the performance tire line, a magazine contract for Alfa Romeo Inc. We were producing their corporate magazine for their customers. We were doing the Alfa Romeo Owners Club magazine. We were doing a magazine for the International Jet Ski Boating Association. So we had
not everybody has that.
So we had a lot going on, but we wanted to do this. We wanted to make this magazine. Bill has been the heart of that. And, you know, we've been in several businesses together, and he's just a tireless worker and very bright person, has a great sensibility about art, design, and content. And he helped us reboot this magazine when we reacquired it in 2012. So he's been the foundation of our agency business as well. So he really is an origin story person. And Andrew Krask, we're fortunate to attract Andrew to our team.
Krasky.
And I believe it might have been 1994 or 95, but it was early on in the Racer story. He was working at On Track.
Yep.
Magazine, I had a tangential involvement in the conceptual part of that. I worked at that company briefly in the late 1970s, which was Paul Oxman Publishing, and Andrew was part of the team that made it real and made it come to life. And he's just worked on everything we've done, basically, and he's terrific, hardworking, and insightful. Understands who we are maybe better than we do.
So you mentioned one thing that I wanted to jump into. So we've spoken about these 92 and 97 numbers in terms of anniversaries for the magazine and .com. There's also some other anniversaries in there where you, on a personal front, said, I'm going to go try something different.
Yeah.
There was another great point where you said, I need to get my baby back.
Yeah.
And you had some key folks that said, you know what, we want to be a part of that in getting Racer back, because it went from being this thick, like I said, National Geographic of motor racing for North America type product to something that was very thin and wasn't particularly compelling when it was out of your hands. Tell me about this relaunch, rebirth, and what it's been like bringing the real, I guess you could say, the original Racer back to Racer. Because there was a period when it wasn't yours, when had the name, didn't have a lot else that we would confuse with its previous existence.
Yeah, but what it did have is it had the, still the best creative team in the business was still there. They just were not enabled to, through financial circumstance, to do what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the story of Racer is an interesting one. There's a, it's kind of ironic that the original vision or the idea of Racer was modeled after what we thought was the excellence of Autosports brand in the global marketplace. They were, you know, a pulp weekly magazine. It wasn't a physically high quality production value, but the quality of the content was exceptional.
Absolutely.
So we looked at this and said, and this is in the time I was working at Paul Oxman in the 1970s.
Wow.
A fellow named Steve Nicholas and I worked
Steve
on it.
Steve Nicholas.
We worked, he was my roommate, and we had one pot, one pan, two spoons and a fork, and one couch we found out behind the apartment, but with fleas. But the
wow.
But the idea with this was to be Autosport America, so that was the working title for this mock-up and these ideas that we were developing. I'd left Oxman to start my own company by the time Steve and the team eventually got it going. And then ironically, Steve left and joined my company, and many of the people, Jeremy Shaw, who'd worked at OnTrack, and this thing was called OnTrack.
The patron saint of American open wheel race, junior open wheel racing.
Gordon Kirby, who'd been central to OnTrack / Autosport America. All these people helped us to conceive what Racer might be in the late 1980s. So it was not surprising that eventually the publisher of Autosport came knocking in June 1998. I received a fax with my name beautifully misspelled, asking for a meeting and a conversation about acquiring the company. And at that time, most of the major media companies, publishers of Road and Track, publishers of Motor Trend, and several others, had come to us about acquiring the business because we'd achieved a certain scale and success with Racer. But Haymarket was persistent, and we came to an agreement where they acquired the majority of the company in the very beginning of January 2001. And I stayed with the company for 5 years, was offered an opportunity to stay. They offered me a 10-year contract, which truly frightened me. I didn't. Then a 5-year, and I just realized there were strings attached, and the publishing industry was going through compression, consolidation, and the strings attached were eliminating some of the positions of my key people in the company, and it wasn't attractive. There was no ill intent from Haymarket. There were some great people there, Peter Fubister in particular, who was kind of the patron saint of the Autosport brand, who recently passed away, and just a lovely man, was a neighbor of mine in Laguna Beach, and we came to a hard decision to leave, and Bill left with me, as did Paul Leggett and Celia Shambaugh, who were part of our team at Racer Special Projects, and we started Fanner Communications again, which had been the original company that did all of this, and we went on our merry way, and I won't bore you with everything that happened in between, but about 6.5 years later, we had this fateful dinner where I was invited to a dinner the night before the IndyCar finale in Las Vegas, where Dan Weldon lost his life, sadly, and it was with the Racer team, and I was sitting with my team in a restaurant having dinner, and it was quite moving, and I met the new head of Haymarket in America, and he was an American, and we hit it off, and the fellow who'd originally led the acquisition, Tony Shulp, had provided the introduction to get this dinner together, and out of that came this call wanting to know if I wanted my company back.
Wow.
And I think the next sentence, we've effed it up. You want it back? And that's how we've ended up back here.
So the back here part, I think folks who visit Racer.com, hopefully on a daily basis, either reading the magazine in digital or print form, have a feel for the full might of what Racer was when it began. Obviously a lot of different names from a contributor standpoint, but I think folks get to see and feel that. I don't know if everybody understands what continues to drive this, though. And I always think back to you at Ontario, was it? Ontario Motor Speedway, making your own pass to get in.
Yes.
As a young gas station employee. So it's a little bit off the left field, but I look at what comes out from Racer today, and I'm always taken back to the point that the man who founded this was someone who, with pen or pencil or and paper or something, could conceptualize and create art to for something as simple as getting in to see his heroes run around the racetrack. Can you share that story? Because it's revealing, and I think speaks to just who we continue to be.
Well, it you know, it's really interesting to look back on it. And I have on my Facebook page is a photograph of me standing in a pit lane, my first moment in a pit lane at Ontario Speedway in 1971. And I'm standing there with a big grin on my face. My fake pass had just gotten me in, and Joe Leonard is driving by in the background in practice. And the team's pushing his car out. He won the race a few weeks later. And I was just thrilled to be there. And I had a reasonable amount of artistic talent. I like to draw and I like to paint. So a few months before that, I had also had a part-time job at a hobby shop and sporting goods store. And the company that was sponsoring the Formula One, Formula 5000 race at Ontario Motor Speedway, which was a replica of Indy, replica of Indy, it was going to be all the top Formula One teams in a non-championship race against America's best in Formula 5000 cars. Sounded great, wasn't so great for the guys in the Formula 5000 cars, but I had to be there. And Spalding Sporting Goods was owned by the Questor Corporation, which was a sponsor.
Questor Grand Prix.
And the owner of the store was given a credential, and that was passed down to the manager, who I knew well, and he didn't want to go to the race. So he handed me this, and it was, I remember just holding it, my hands were trembling. I of course didn't want to go alone. I wanted to share the experience with my friends who had a racing interest, which is the genesis of everything I do. I want to share my enthusiasm and my passion for racing with people who care about it like I do. And we stayed up all night long, made enough passes. We decided, well, why not film this? So we went into this thing. I think I'm 15 and a half or 16 years old, and now you would have be able to race at Le Mans, but at that time it was unusual to be that young. So we ended up going inside the garage, the pit area, the starting grid, the victory circle, trackside, with filming this, and I have the video. It's actually film transferred. It had been saved in a safe. It was in excellent condition. So there's a zit-faced me, you know, wandering around the grid of a Formula One, Formula 5000 race, and we literally witnessed Mario Andretti close range pulling in his Ferrari. And afterwards, everybody clears out. We do a stop action video or film lap around the Ontario Motor Speedway Victory Circle, which was shaped like a big O, you know, driving around, sliding on our butts as if we're racing.
Wow.
You did one frame at a time. And all this film exists. I think we need to publish
it. We do.
But the point is that it was a rocket fuel. So I had to go to the next race. We captured, that was an IndyCar race, we captured all of it with Polaroids. So we have a photographic record of our prowling around the garage area. We were eventually caught. I was, the day of the race, I was taking a painting in. I wanted to give it to Dan Gurney. It was of him racing in his final IndyCar race the year before. It was an acrylic painting. And my father was furious when when it found out what had happened. And that painting was confiscated along with some of the passes and all of the paraphernalia. And but we were caught because we were all wearing our Union gas station shirts. And we hadn't really put two and two together and realized that they used methanol, and there was no need for people to be wandering around the garage area with...
Wow, that's youth, though. But the fact that you guys, you know, essentially bootlegged and bum-rushed your way in, got to see all this amazing stuff, that's...
And, you know, I did contribute to society. I was a parking lot attendant at the Speedway. So I did park you if you were in the East Lot that is now the Ontario Mills Mall, not far from California Speedway / Auto Club Speedway. So, you know, that we would eventually help launch, which is, again, so ironic.
So tell me about how this early passion, moves into your first racing magazine. And again, I realize we're celebrating Racer's anniversary, but you wouldn't have a Racer magazine and we wouldn't have anniversaries without something, without your initial passions in the 1970s to create your first print magazine.
Yeah, well, life is a happy accident sometimes, and you know, not unlike having that pass handed to me, it changed my life. We decided, again, we were just filled with passion, my buddies, and one in particular, Mike Van Adder, who went on to be quite a successful art director and worked at a number of Peterson's magazines and Hot Wheels art director, and really talented guy. We started a business called Brazewood Graphics, and we selected that name because it sounded like something you'd hear an FM radio DJ say, you know, sponsored by Brazewood. So Brazewood Graphics was, we basically did livery design and logo design, and we were just out of high school going to college, and we ran across an opportunity to help a guy named Don Alexander with a magazine called Formula Ford Review. He was in the middle of the first issue. So we helped design it and did illustrations for it and then proceeded to the second one. Unfortunately, my father was stricken with cancer at that moment, and I dropped out for the 4 or 5 months heart-wrenching struggle watching him wither away, and he had such a great racing passion. Worked on the Apollo program, was a real inspiration to me. And Mike carried on working with it. By that time, it had been renamed Formula. Many of the people involved were people who become lifelong relationships. One of them was Paul White at Automotive Development, had helped the magazine, and he founded Automotive Development, which is ADF Formula Ford, and then Swift Race Cars, which ultimately ended up building an Indy car. These people were terrific. Mike Hull was part of that world, who now is at Ganassi. And I was just around a bunch of good people as I emerged from this sadness of losing my dad at an early age. And they became my surrogate family. And the Formula became my new home. And that world was, you know, not a lot of money in it. I certainly lived below the poverty level working on the magazine as an art director and a managing editor, but I helped as it carried forward. Don was no longer involved. Mike, for whatever reason, stepped away. I helped find the money to continue it, which became, I think 18, 19 years old. That was a preview of the rest of my life. We called a fellow named John Benton, and John was racing in Formula 5000 at the time, and he was the adopted son of Senator Benton of Illinois. Was the publisher of Encyclopedia Britannica, and John ran the Encyclopedia Britannica Educational Films Division. Had been the backer of Pacific Formula, a company that had backed Formula.
Yeah.
And they were a race car importer, and I knew him not well. By reputation, and he'd never met me, and on the phone I sounded much older than I did in person.
Wow.
And when he saw this long-haired kid, he was somewhat frightened that he'd been talking to someone
duped
that looked homeless. But we had adults in the room. A fellow named Hugh Mooney was going to be the editor. We had a number of other people who were more mature, accountant and so forth, Dennis Roberts, these people. We're working at the in this world, and we put together a team to carry Formula forward in 1975. And I was 20 years old, and I spent a lot of nights sleeping on the floor or in the Formula 5000 car in the shop in the back because it was comfortable. Somehow it worked for a while, Formula was the first racer, if you will. It was our attempt. And a lot of the essence of what Racer became, you know, that was kind of my practice lap. That was the school where I learned a lot of it. But I left to go work for Paul Oxman, and he had a book publishing business, posters, calendars, and we bid on the sports car contract, and I won that by just doing a proposal. But Paul just said, "Go for it," and did that, and that that was the beginning of the next stage, where I learned more about publishing, more about design. But Formula carried on for a time after. But when I look at a Formula magazine, it moves me, because there was many of the people, like Pete Lyons was involved in it later on. Yeah. The late Jim McQueen, who recently passed, came from Auto Week to work on it. John Zimmerman, who would eventually be the first editor of Racer, worked on it. Steve Nicholas wrote for it. Gordon Kirby was the constant. He was in the first issues of Formula I worked on, and he was an inspiration, and actually was the person who compelled me to choose the name Racer in 1991 when we were developing the magazine. So there's a thread of continuity throughout all of these things.
There's also a bit of a subset of us who are constantly looking on eBay and other places to fill out our Formula magazine collections. So there's that too. So if we look at where we're at today, we don't peel back the covers a lot on what we do. Right? We wake up, we work, we do, whether it's graphic design, writing a story, photography, editing, you name it. We're in the business of creating and telling stories. We rarely try to tell our story of how we tell our stories. But what has it been like in this 2015, 16, 17 era of motor racing media in North America narrowing? You cannot go to your Barnes & Noble and find many motor racing themed magazines, whether it's four wheels, two wheels, you name it. Websites, the proliferation of a lot of racing themed websites, some of them professionally staffed, but everything that I've seen, everything that I continue to hear is it isn't getting easier, and there aren't that many of us left. Do you like that fight? Do you hate the fight? What?
I love it. It's like I wanted to be a racing driver when I was young, and I always knew that it would be harder if I kept going forward. And that's part of life, is it gets more, the challenge increases, and I don't ever want it to be easy, because to me that means you're going backward. And I think that there's less competition, and I view this as an endurance race. I don't view it, never viewed it as a sprint race. I've done this professionally in one form or another since I think the Times Grand Prix at Riverside in 1972. We set up a card table and started selling art prints.
Wow.
And from that moment forward, this has been my life, and I just know that if we keep doing what we do and keep evolving, we will succeed. And one of the things that sustains me and the team is that we're making more than a magazine and more than a website and more, running more than an agency. We're building a brand that is a promise to everyone we touch, from a reader to an advertiser to a marketing partner to a sanctioning body. There's the Racer way, and that Racer way is quality, authority, and beauty, and ultimately just emotional engagement. We want to create emotion, and when we went to originally grow the business in 1996, I went and sought my second round of investment. My first investor was Jeff Swart, who's now a renowned director.
Yeah.
And he was my kind of partner in co-envisioning the idea of Racer back in 1978. It took a long time to get to launching it in 1992. Yeah. And the Dyson family, Rob and Chris, came on board as investors in 1996. And they share the same values and the same vision. And actually predicted that we would reacquire the company once we sold the majority of it. And they were there and stood with us in reacquiring and building this business again. And they're racers. They live it and feel it just like we do, have the same aesthetic and editorial sense. And they believe what we do is important to the sport. We're a reflection of all it can be and has been.
Wow. Last question, which is maybe ending on a question compared to a statement, referring back to this being a team, Racer being a not dissimilar to racing teams that I've run. I think of what we do, and I know that when I wake up in the morning, either my home office or at a track to cover what whatever race we're happen to be at. I come in each morning with a mindset that is 100% identical to when I was walking into the trailer at Team X or walking out to pit lane for that practice session or that race. I view what we do from a competitive mindset. I realize that the avenue of what we do is through storytelling, and you know, it's a print and digital medium, but everything that I see about Racer is 100% like a race team, and we get up wanting to win, beat everyone else,
yes,
be better than them, put them many laps down.
And nothing personal in that. It's
shake
just
their hand. And again, this is a little bit of behind the scenes stuff. We're great friends with a lot of our competitors. Keep in mind that, you know, many of us have all worked together at various points in time, gone on to different places. So just as you see on the grid of an IndyCar race or IMSA race, well, you know, these rivals are shaking hands and fist bumping before they get in the car, and then they go beat the crap out of each other and are dead set on winning. It's no different here. Do you see that recognition of that approach, that mindset, and how we do things when you are asked to speak with or advise someone in a major open wheel series or sports car series, as you're going around talking to the people that actually make the racing series happen that we cover? Do they see that Racer isn't just, you know, a bunch of nerds with microphones and keyboards asking questions, but actually they're one of us?
I do, and it's an interesting balance because, you know, we have the agency business and we've worked with IndyCar, we've worked with IMSA, we've worked for a very long time with SCCA, we've worked with ISC, we've worked with, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, we've worked with a lot of these companies in a consultative capacity outside of the editorial capacity. In one sense, we have to overcome fundamental concern about us having a media arm. We're able to separate it. But at the same time, there's never a question that we know what we're talking about. I mean, Roger Penske recently said in an interview that we get it right, basically. We come from knowing our stuff and making sure we get it right. And I appreciate that about everybody I work with. And that's kind of the heart and soul of what we do and who we are. And we live by reputation. And that opens the doors for us to do just about anything we can dream of, and we have many things we're still dreaming of. And you know, I said we work for the readers. I also work for one other person, and that's 16-year-old boy that made that, you know, credential. And that, for me, I don't want to disappoint him. He had this burning ambition and desire to belong here. I want to remember how that felt to want to be inside this sport, because that feeling's never left me. And that's everything we make communicates that. And I want to invite everybody into motorsport, into racing, and I want them to stay. And I think people get that when they do business. They know we're here for the good of the sport. Everything we do is about that.
And that was Racer Magazine founder Paul Fanner. Hopefully he came away with a little bit of an appreciation for who he is, what motivates him, which in turn motivates us, what he fights for. The guy is a fighter. It's something that I saw in him immediately and appreciate on a daily basis. This is a guy who wakes up wanting to beat everybody, and that's a racer. That's what racing is. It isn't about the glory and whatever else. All the other trappings are cool, but the drivers that you love, the team owners, the mechanics, they wake up every morning wanting to beat the next person. That's Paul. It's myself. Glenn Denning, it's Foster, it's Miller, it's so many others. So it's a cool little band that Paul has put together. I think that's why we are fiercely proud of what we have. If you check out Racer.com, you'll see what Paul's been doing for more than a month now, looking back at milestone issues of the magazine, from number one through a variety of special issues and just special things throughout the years that Racer Magazine has covered. We also have the 20th anniversary of Racer.com, so just a celebratory time, but also really cool for me to sit down with Paul, and I don't know if we've ever had this much time together at once, sitting down, just talking about his past, talking about his motivations, and the things that he keeps pushing for, trying to make Racer bigger and better. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and if you did, tell me. Let me know, at Marshall Pruitt. We're on Facebook. Paul's also on Facebook and Twitter. So drop us a line if you want to hear more. If you have any questions, let us know. So I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thanks for listening.